Welcome to another weekly edition of Chatting with Charlie, hosted by Charlie Johnston, with his co-host, Dr. Joe Brickner, and presented by the Corps of Renewal and Charity. Visit us online at corac.co.
Good day, all you fellow Next Right Steppers, and welcome to Chatting with Charlie. We have a very special event beginning today. We're going to do a series on emergency preparedness. Joining me, of course, is my erstwhile co-host, Joe Brickner, Dr. Joe Brickner, I should add. He was the longtime basketball coach at Benedictine College, business professor, all-around good guy. most of the time. And our special guest today is what I consider, a man I consider to be a bona fide expert on emergency preparedness. And he's going to take us through the basics. Today, we're going to talk about the different types of threats we might face. The more you know, the better you're prepared, the less you're likely to panic. I would like, first of all, Ed McCulloch, would you introduce yourself, give some of your qualifications, and then do an opening prayer before we go into the meat of this podcast? Thank you.
Yes, and somewhere in one of these slides, and this slide is on your, these slides are on your website, Charlie, I think. I list out all of my qualifications. Essentially, I was a geologist. Many years ago, didn't actually work out too well because I'm colorblind, but I worked a lot with uranium and went in the Army Ranger for 21 years, infantry officer. My secondary MOS was nuclear biological chemical warfare. Marty and I, my wife, she may be on, actually. She's in Olympia, Washington, or in Washington State, I'm sorry. Actually went through a few emergency types of things, one of them being Chernobyl. We were in southern Germany when Chernobyl happened, and the fallout hit pretty heavy where we were in Bamberg, Germany, and we were not allowed to leave our apartment, which were old German army barracks that were made out of stone, so we were safe for 2 weeks. And we had three kids, and we were not ready, and Marty and I quit eating at the end. And ever since then, well, when you do that once, you will never do it again. So, and we'll get to a couple other things that I've done in emergency preparedness stuff officially. Let's start out with Our Father, if that's okay. Okay. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Amen, Father. And I'm going to share my screen now and start through the slides. There are a lot of them, and we'll get through a few today. I'm hoping you can see.
Most of the stuff is going to be Ed talking, but I got to tell you, once I did give a talk up in Ed's neck of the woods, his wife set it up, and Ed picked me up at the airport. He was my driver. And when he first was taking me to the location, he was Silent Sam, which was really bad for me. I thought he was a very dour. Because, as my mom said, I started talking in complete, if garbled sentences on my first birthday. And as my late mother says, I haven't shut up since. So when somebody talked back, it's pretty rough on me. By the time we were done, when he drove me back to the airport, I could get a word in edgeways. He had warmed up. So, it's good stuff. And I don't know if you want to know. Let's just let Ed take it away, get to the meat. This is going to be mostly Ed going through this part of this presentation, the types of threats you have to be concerned about. Understand, my friends, this is about the threats. future installments will be about what to do, how to prepare, because there are very few threats that with a little basic info, you cannot be prepared for to deal with. Okay, Ed.
Thank you. Perfect lead in. This is another prayer. We won't do this one, but your state of mind is the most important part of all of this. And your relationship with God and prayer is all, you can have nothing else except this and still do well. Why am I qualified? Army officer, airborne ranger, geologist, nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, handling hazardous materials in large amounts for over 30 years. I worked on at a Grays Harbor County in Olympia or in Washington State. Did hazard mitigation partly because I was working on the railroad and I knew a lot about the railroad. That particular place, when I left home and I went to work down in the Grays Harbor area, there was a sign that said, this is the way going west was the way to the volcano evacuation route. Same sign on the other side when I was driving home, it said tsunami evacuation route. So we were ready then, because by then we'd already lived through some stuff with the Chernobyl. I trained responders on how to deal with railroad emergencies. I take kids and people survival training. If you're interested, you get the clothes you're wearing, a hat, a pair of gloves, a coat, a knife, and a piece of soft metal. And that's what you get. And I teach you how to live in the wilderness. People say they want to last three nights. Most after the first night, they're ready to go home. But so if you're interested, I'd do that for you too. FEMA qualified. Did a bunch of stuff in the Army. Two of my responsibilities in Korea, South Korea, was at one point I was in charge of if that war had happened, getting all U.S. citizens out of South Korea. And then another job I had in there was, because of my background in nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, and my geology background, if we had ever signed a treaty with North Korea, a nuclear treaty with North Korea, I would have been one of the people going into North Korea with a team to verify that they were, following the treaty. So I have a lot of qualifications. I'm going to go back to my first slide again. And that down at the bottom there, it talks about survivalist and prepper. This is my definition of this. I am a prepper, meaning that I'm going to help you if I can. A survivalist in my book is a guy who has everything he needs and many of the things you need. And if you step on his property, he's going to shoot at you. So I am a prepper. I plan on helping my neighbors and the people around me. So, and I won't get into how we're doing that. That'll be for a future class.
And Joe, if you have something, a question you want to clarify, jump in and ask. But survivalists tend to look inward, and preppers, properly defined, look outwards to help build communities. Yes. Would that be their statement?
Yes, that's pretty close. The survivalist, he's going to have, you're right, he's bunkered in, but he's going to have fields of fire and barbed wire and other things to keep you from getting close to him.
And historically, you need to know that survivalists rarely survive in great crises. People who work and form communities do survive. It's like the old...
So you mean,
Yeah,
that is correct. That is correct. And in the entry up to the room where Marty and I have all of our food and everything stored, there's a story about a guy in Bosnia. He was an old man, and he had a little freezer, and he would open his freezer and it would be full of meat, and he would feed his entire village. And then the next morning, they've used all the meat out of the freezer. Next morning, and this is a true story, next morning he had opened it up and it was full of meat again. That is a prepper. That is a person who believes in God and will live. Does that help?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So, okay. Stop me when you have sure. Questions. Really, two types of disasters, man-made and natural. I'm going to go through some man-made ones first. I've listed a whole bunch of stuff, but all you got to pretty much do is look on the TV or on the news, and you will see all of the bad things that are going on in the United States now. I have a theory that every time we have a weak president, we are under threat and we have another war. A recent article, FBI Director Christopher Wray warns terrorism is a threat now in the United States. This was a few months ago that he warned that. We are purposely letting people in now. I know that many of them are terrorists. I don't know if you know what a clacker is, it's a device that's a nickname for device that in the military we use to make explosions go off. They have found guys crossing the border with clackers on them. I don't know if you knew that. Mm-hmm. So terrorism is one of the things we're getting there, and it's something you need to be prepared for. It is a man-made disaster. I'm going to read you an email it's not too long, that I read to, or that I sent to all my kids, because I have kids living all over the world. And the subject is, Hamas, Hezbollah terrorists are on U.S. soil waiting for Iran's green light to attack, House hearing told. That's what Christopher Wray, the FBI director, said. This is what I tell my kids. Start being more careful where you go. And I'll send this to you, Charlie, if you want it, to put it up. Start being careful where you go. Stay away from big crowds. When you go someplace, be aware of what people are doing around you. If it seems like unusual activity, leave immediately. Report suspicious activity to 911. When in a building, look for alternate exits and keep them in mind. Know how to get out. For instance, in a restaurant, the best way out may be through the kitchen and a rear exit. Be aware that the alternative exit may also be watched by terrorists. Stay calm, seek safety, believe you can find safety, believe in yourself, panic later. Cover, meaning be in a place where bullets cannot penetrate, for instance, a concrete wall, and hide if you cannot evacuate. If authorities arrive, keep your hands up so that they know you're not the threat. Follow their instructions. Be aware that terrorists may dress as police or even military. If their instructions don't make sense, meaning they're not leading you to safety, get out in an alternative way. Dress like you may have to run. Stay away from dressy attire because it brings attention to you. Establish communication plans and meeting places. Try not to be out alone. If trapped, attack, throw something at them and rush them. Terrorists will not expect that. Get inside their decision cycle, meaning think faster than them. Don't hesitate. They won't expect you to attack back. Last, practice some of these things. Get some muscle memory. You will react faster once you have made muscle memory. I believe, I'm going to back up a little bit here. I was in the Army during the Cold War. I commanded a sector of the West German Czechoslovakian border for 2 years with a heavy infantry company. I have pictures of me standing within feet of Soviet soldiers. I know what it looks like. And right now, and this is what was in this email, I believe we're closer to war now than any time in my life. It will not be a symmetrical war, meaning confined to a battlefield. It will include terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. All of us will be part of the targets. So if you want that, Charlie, I can send it to you. But
and the thing is, I mean, that rushing at him, I actually did that once with a guy that was trying to bank. I mean, he had the teller by the throat, and he was about to pull a knife, and I just charged him. He was bigger than me. I planned to jump up. There was a marble wall behind him. I planned to jump up and hit him with my feet. And he looked at me. I shouted, "Hey, you're not going to do that," and started charging. He ran out of the bank. They just don't expect things.
No, so they have a head. They have a plan in their head. And this is what the military teaches people to do. We get inside their decision cycle. Right. So they have a plan in their head. When you get inside their decision cycle, they can't keep up with you. And now you're the threat to them. So, and that's what you did. Other things that other recent stuff. Leaked war plans reveal Germany's preparing for World War III. If there is a World War III, we're going to be involved in it. And it will involve fighting in the United States somewhere. Let's see. The causes and consequences of the Ukrainian war. I do not understand the Ukrainian war at all. I believe it's about money or something. Another thing that I've noticed is when I look at the pictures of the battles there, all of the equipment that the Russians are using that is getting destroyed is all old stuff from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. The stuff from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s isn't on the battlefield. It's somewhere else. I don't know why. If they really wanted to win that battle, that's where they would have all of that equipment. But it's not. It's somewhere else. So there's another plan. I don't know what it is. With our corrupt government, who knows, right?
And our corrupt media. I mean, you had a year where the media was talking about Ukraine rushing from victory to victory. And then when you looked at the map, when they rushed from victory to victory, how did Russia end up with so much Ukrainian territory? Our media and our government are one big psyop now.
Yeah, they are. There's other types of man-made disasters. I'll go on with some of them. You should be able to see, this is more natural threats, earthquakes, you know, the fires, the sun. Here I can talk a little bit about the poles shifting. I don't know if you keep up with it, but having been a geologist, I do. The North Pole is moving. It's moving pretty fast, actually. And it could flip. And we know it's flipped before, before historical times. The issue with that is nobody really knows what would happen. Your compass would point the wrong way. But if that did happen, and this picture of the sun is why that is there, that the magnetosphere that protects us from the sun, from the radiation from the sun, may disappear for a period of time. And we may be getting sunburst kind of activity. And if you read about a sunburst, what it could do without the magnetic sphere, it's kind of like the hand of God wiping out parts of the earth. So,
two things on that, if I might. Understand when he's talking about the pole shifting, he's talking about the magnetic pole. He's not talking about the axis of the earth shifting.
I, Okay, so pole shift, meaning that the Earth would tip over sideways, and maybe the North Pole, the North Pole would be in Australia or something. That's not realistic, if you ask me. And there are people who believe that it's done it in the past. All of that information is just, to me, proof of the plates moving in the on the Earth. It's not the pole shifting would be mean that the gravity of the sun and the moon and the whole gravity in the entire solar sphere is out of whack. And I don't believe in pole shifting. I believe that the North Pole, the magnetic pole, we know it's flipped over in the past.
Yeah.
So we just don't know what's going to happen. Go ahead.
The other thing I mentioned on solar flares, my brother, when he was in the military, part of his job was to assess that and develop plans protecting it.
Yeah.
Just in a year, we had a massive solar flare that would have knocked out everything, every electronic on Earth, except, and here's the hand of God, it flowed in the opposite direction of the Earth from the other side of the sun. But people who think that that's not a major danger do not understand it at all.
Yeah, it is. It's the one thing really that if God's going to do something, it's going to be that.
Yep.
And that's EMP, electromagnetic pulse. There's two types of electromagnetic pulse. There's man-made, and I'll just be honest with you. Most people are afraid of it. It is not necessarily something that is going to be easy to do. A high altitude nuke will have some EMP, but its range is not very far. A natural EMP is what I worry about. There are ways to protect yourself, Faraday cages. And in one of the classes, I can demonstrate a Faraday cage. You see in the movies, EMP blast and your car doesn't work. Well, that could happen. But if you believe it was EMP, just unhook your battery and hook it back up. And if it's a computer run car, it may work again. The older cars with the points, and a lot of people don't even, my sons didn't know what points were distributed points. So those cars, they're going to be fine. In the Army, we used to take our, with our radios, we would take the antenna off, two-way radios, take the antenna off. That's pretty much going to save them. It is an issue, but there's a lot of argument about how bad a man-made one would be or could be. Yes, it is something. And later on in the class, we talk about how to protect against that.
Ed, do you feel that climate change is a natural threat?
No. I do not.
Okay.
I have lots of reasons. The data has been manipulated. I believe climate change is quote unquote elites attempting to gain control of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And not climate change is natural somewhere. And it's not in this presentation, but I can dig it out someday, is a geological kind of timeline of the last, 300 million billion or, 300 million years. And the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to now, based on geologic time, is minuscule. As a matter of fact, geologists who was watching it go down and down and down and down over the last 20 or 30 years, at one point were kind of like, this is not good. if carbon dioxide disappears, what happens? Plants die.
That's right.
And if plants die, we can't live. And it's creeping its way up a little bit right now, and they're using that creep up as a tool to try and, you know, get away with controlling our lives, in my opinion. So
yeah, one of our good friends is Mike Thompson is his name. He's now a state senator in Kansas, fortunately, and he's fighting this day in and day out. He was a meteorologist in the Navy. And then after he left there, he was the head meteorologist at various major television stations around here. So put in 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's constantly telling us this, it's just bunk. You know, all the data that, like you say, they're manipulating data to create a narrative. And
right.
So I just wanted to see if that was your experience also.
Yes, it is. And, you know,
one other quick thing about the EMP, just for the mindset, I'm going to do it. Keep in mind that even if there were a massive solar flare and everything was wiped out, that gives a competitive advantage to normal people. Do not panic. The government commissars right now, they're as helpless as a newborn puppy if they don't have all their computer structures and all that. You can get out and still do things.
Yeah. So later on in the presentation, and not today, I talk about living simple, like my grandparents did, you know, in the early 1900s, or even my great grandparents before that. They heated their houses with wood stoves. My grandmother didn't even have electricity until I was probably 10. Then she got a single light in the kitchen. You know, they had outhouses. You have to believe that you can live without all of the modern amenities, you know, electricity, water, you know, running water, et cetera, et cetera. So there are some real basic things that you have to have, and they will keep you alive. And we'll go through those later. But the whole point of me taking kids survival camping is, and adults if they want to go, is, oh, I can actually live out here without much, with a knife and some clothes on, you know. So it's a mental thing. You have to be mentally prepared for it. It's not going to be comfortable, but you can live.
So those are the types of things you're going to cover in our next session, right? Not today.
Yeah, yes. And we need to actually decide exactly what I do, how many sessions we do. But I can do easily in 45 minutes something that these are the basics you have to have.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ring of Fire is down there on that thing. The picture here, you need to know if you're in an earthquake zone, because there's some things that you're going to need to be able to do. I don't know where you guys live. Are you guys in earthquake zones?
Sometimes.
Okay.
No, we're in the tornado zone here in Kansas City.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you guys have the, what's the name of the big fault in Missouri there?
The one runs up through St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, you do need to have some readiness for knowing what to do if there is an earthquake. And my wife and kids and I have lived through a couple of big ones. So.
Mm.
And I can tell you, when you first see one, you're going to deny that it's even happening, because the floors and the earth looks like waves on a ocean. So it can mess you up, kind of. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go on to the next man-made threats. You know, what's going to happen with China and Taiwan, et cetera. all the other wars that are going on in the world now. That bottom picture is people crossing into the United States. The middle picture is pictures of where the silos where the missiles are. I actually do not believe the silos themselves will be a target in a nuclear war. If you talk to people who plan nuclear wars, and what I was trained to do was to survive in a nuclear war, not to plan it. They tell me that the missiles in those missile fields would have to arrive right at the right second in order to knock down the missiles that are coming out of the missile fields. It is not a huge problem in my mind. I'm going to flash up another picture here, maybe. Well, I'm going to just mention it. There's a new book. It's called Strategic Relocation. I guess that's on the fourth edition. It's not that new, but if you were to buy it, and I will get a picture to you, Charlie, so we can put it on there. It talks about all kinds of safe places and things like that. One of the things I teach in the emergency preparedness class, and I'll just mention it here, is you want to, if you can, live more than one gas tank away from any big city. And somewhere in here, we have some maps that show that. Why is that? You know, Charlie?
I'll jump to it, but I think that's overblown. Worrying about people coming out into trying to take things, marauding gangs and everything. The problem is, and why I think that's overblown, Ed, is that, when I was walking across the country, I slept in the inner cities. When I was in a city, I just find a patch of woods and everything. Gang members, the violent types, they are very territorial. And the truth is, when they get outside of their territory, they're terrified. So if you're doing the basics of self-defense, you're not going to have marauding gangs like Mad Max coming at you. I don't think, anyway.
And you may be right, and I hope I'm wrong. But I think it's going to be the people who have families and kids that can't feed them that are going to be out. And this is hard to say. This is hard to say, but they're only going to get one gas tank away, because if there's no electricity, there's going to be no gas stations. So it's just a consideration.
So you're saying you need to be more than one gas tank away.
That's a theory, and all of this is open for discussion. There are tons of different takes on all of this. It's all open for discussion.
Now, is that gas tank a Prius or is that a Ford truck?
Kind of depends.
It's something I never ride it, but I got an adult tricycle. You've probably seen them before. It's just like a 7-speed bicycle, except it has two wheels on the back and it has a basket. So I can put my backpack on there and just toddle along on that.
Yeah.
Who knows? If I need it, maybe I'll get killed while I'm riding, but I can get more than a gas tank away.
Yeah, you can. There you're going to need water and a little bit of food.
Yep.
This lower right-hand little picture on the slide is talking about man-made diseases, which it looks more and more like COVID was. And now they're talking about disease X or something.
Mm-hmm.
There are basic things that you can do to try and fight those. And later on on another day, we'll talk about some of the things, the herbs and the natural things that are pretty good. My wife does a lot of that. We know a lot of people who do that. but just natural things to that can help you get through any sort of a disease. And then, you know, there's actually things like hawthorn tea and stuff like that. And we will talk about those later. But this is a new threat.
Go ahead. So, you know, in Corac, we have the Health and Wellness Committee. We do a lot. We've got a bunch of videos and instructional tapes on homeopathy, natural medicine, that sort of thing. And in fact, some people have been joining Corac because in some circles it's going around that we've got the best introductory, get the introductory basics to homeopathy. But I want you to remember something, and that is that one of the devil's primary tools to destroy you is to scare you out of your mind so that you panic. And now the government and the media are obviously the devil's minions because they're doing their dead level best to scare you out of your mind. What Christ said, do what God said. I think it was 72 times in scripture. Be not afraid. The first word, St. John Paul's papacy. Okay.
And you know, Charlie, you're absolutely right. And I believe I said it earlier. The number one thing is your faith. Mm-hmm. You know, use your faith. And believe in that. The place that gets really hard in my mind, and this is what people need to be thinking about, is when they have little kids and they can't feed them and they're getting sick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, prayer, some of the herbs, things like that, you know, can solve them, but you have to believe it's going to work too. So I think I'm on track with what you're saying, Charlie. Am I?
Be not afraid. I've had several situations where I was right near death, and a few on my pilgrimage alone. And the whole deal was, quit worrying so much. My attitude was always, if I'm going to die, by golly, I'm going to go out kicking. And if I'm going to live, I'm going to be kicking my way through to the other side.
Yep. Quit there you go. Beautiful. This slide, EMP, we talked about a little bit, natural EMP, which I actually worry about more than man-made EMP. This one, recent hazards, this is a little old because I don't know if I have COVID on there, but Ebola, you know, nuclear attack. One of the things I talk about is how to survive that, number one. And then, you know, our military, that last one there, our military is only getting worse and worse, unable to defend us. And I believe that's purposeful. And all that's open for discussion.
I would say one thing about nuclear attacks, because that's just not something I have seen a lot of in any context. But keep in mind, from a geopolitical standpoint, most of the countries that are hostile to us right now, they learned the lesson from Japan well. Japan woke a sleeping giant and filled him with a terrible resolve. They want us to continue to be muddling along. They don't want to galvanize the U.S. So I don't really expect much in that context here.
I'm with you, Charlie. I don't believe it is. It's the rogue countries that I worry about. You know, I believe Iran, if they use a nuke, it's going to be shot at Israel. Right. You know, I don't know that we are a big target, but if for some reason we are, and this book, Strategic Relocation, talks about it a little bit. They will try and do a couple of things. Number one, destroy our military as much as they can. And number two, destroy power stations, oil refineries, and places where there's a lot of people, you know, to make us incapable of responding. And but those missiles in the silos and on the submarines are going to get shot back, so they're going to get the same thing. It is not something I worry about a lot, Charlie. It's just with the way the world is today, is there a backpack nuke in New York City somewhere? And I don't know if you know, the U.S. Army used to have backpack nukes. The Corps of Engineers, those guys carried them around, and they were to blow up bridges and things like that. So that's what I'm more worried about, is some local something. So remember avian flu? I should probably put COVID on here, but that was our first. I don't know if it was a real one or not. It seems like one of the first ones I went through as a young man anyway. COVID-19. I'll spend a minute here on here. Sorry. In U.S. Army Field Manual 8-9, there are 10 things that a biological weapon, that define a biological weapon. COVID meets 9 of the 10 requirements to be a biological weapon. The one it doesn't meet is speed, because on a battlefield, you want the biological weapon to make the enemy sick fast so that you can attack or do whatever it is you need to do. In my opinion, when you add the vaccine to the COVID virus, now it has that 10th requirement to be a biological weapon. And this is not classified. You can look up at U.S. Army Field Manual 8-9, and it'll give you the what is the definition of a biological weapon. So if you add up some of the things we've talked about, which is climate change, which we've decided is not real, and now man-made diseases out there, and if you listen to what the World Economic Forum is and those types of people, they're not afraid to tell you that we need to reduce the population of the world.
By 80 or 90%.
Yeah, I know. And they want slaves and themselves, you know.
Yep.
So all this stuff can get scary. Is your government a threat? Right now, maybe. You know, it sure feels like it, doesn't it?
Yep.
And then, you know, with all the stuff, people coming over the border, military age men, you know, some of them with devices that make explosions go, you know, you know, it's just getting weirder and weirder. And all of the efforts to keep Donald Trump out of office, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It feels like we may be in some sort of internal war at some point. And if that, can't say that we are, and I hope we aren't, but you need to be ready with that. And so a lot of the stuff that we talk about in being prepped is, how do I get along if that actually happens? And I'm not talking about...
Right. You have to be aware of it as a threat.
Yeah.
And the efforts to disarm us. I mean, you have a Democratic congressman who has just introduced a bill to outlaw militias. Well,
yeah,
that's because militias are not allowed by the Constitution. They're kind of required by the Constitution.
Yep.
So,
ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I shouldn't. You know how I am. I could get on a tirade. The left doesn't care about the Constitution.
Power. Is that why all these people are, these millions of people are here now, so that they can vote? And I mean, I don't know that for sure. So that they can vote and us lose all of those rights. You know, that's where it feels like right now. More the Great Reset. pandemics, banks failing, a digital future. To me, the digital future is all about trying to control us. So it's a lot to think about. More earthquake. If you're in these zones, you're worse off. Here's the map of the most population in the United States. And so, Joe, I think you're over here, right? Can you see my cursor? Well, I'm not hearing you, Joe.
He forgot to unmute himself. Yeah, oh. But who is right there? I used to be in Chicago. Now I'm in Denver, but I'm not all over the rest of the country.
Yeah. Have you heard of the National Redoubt?
I'm not familiar with that term.
Okay, so there is a National Redoubt that is a group of guys that live in this area that I have outlined here in north central United States. And they know all the bridges and tunnels and everything. If they blow them up, that this area that's shown here, nobody can get in it. There is another concept of the National Redoubt that this is the center of the continent, and no army can reach the center of the continent. One of the reasons I'm in Montana and I live right about here is because it is the National Redoubt. It is kind of the center of the continent. Here's another look at it. And if you see my cursor, it actually goes up into Canada and everything. This is not the guys who want to blow up bridges and things like that. This is people who believe that this is probably the safest place in the North American continent. Any thoughts on that, Charlie, since you've never heard of it before?
I hadn't heard of it before. It makes sense. And the good thing about it is I'm only 3 days bike ride away from it.
Okay. And so, this is actually the hardest part of all this is describing all these potential natural and man-made threats. What we do next, we'll start here. We'll start talking about how to specifically get ready. I want to show this one last one, and then I think we're about up to our time. But this is a threat and probability chart. And the way you look at the threats, man-made or natural, and you can see them on the side here, and what it is, and what's the probability, and what's the risk. So, for instance, I live within 90 miles of the biggest volcano in the world, Yellowstone. If Yellowstone goes, that would probably be an event that would destroy a good portion of civilization in the northern hemisphere. So it's a super high risk, but it is a very low probability. So you can look down here, and a friend of mine did this. This is his own chart, and so what's the for example, a blizzard in Seattle, Washington is low probability but high risk because they are not prepared for that. A blizzard in Billings, Montana is very high probability but very low risk because we're ready for it. So I tell people they should take this chart and do their own risk analysis of man-made and natural disasters where they live. And this helps you figure out what you need to do to be ready. And I've talked over, I don't know if you've ever seen one of these. I will not, because I'm a railroader, I will not live within 10 miles of a railroad. This is what happens sometimes. And you never heard of this one. This was a 110 car oil train, crude oil from the Bakken. So it's very flammable. And every 90 seconds, it was 110 cars. Every 90 seconds, the next one blew up, and then the next one blew up. The reason you didn't hear of this is because it was Southeast Montana and nobody lives down there. And there's no, the Palestine one. And I don't know if you know it. I work for the Federal Railroad Administration now. I investigate railroad accidents. The Palestine one was bad, but it was way overhyped. So, but I won't live very close to a railroad because this is what can happen. Any questions, Joe or Charlie or?
Well, I was going to say, Joe, have you got anything?
No, I'm looking forward to next session.
Well, I want to bring something up here that, again, it's a state of mind. You know, when I walked across the country, 3,200 miles, I did that, but I'm supposed to be paralyzed on my right side. That was after my neurological damage and everything. I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Once I went into a tobacco shop, got my big pack on my back, and I was talking to these three ladies that worked there and telling my story. I was real cheery, telling good, you know, how much fun it is and all that. And this one lady gave me a shrewd look, and she said that her nephew, her 21-year-old nephew, decided to hike the Appalachian Trail. And I said, oh, great. You know, it's a wonderful experience. And she gave me an even shrewder look and said he gave up after a week because it was too hard. It's a state of mind. My brother had a picture where I was part of a group. I am not known for my physical prowess. My brother jokingly said, you know, if you took any group picture that you're a part of, and you ask which one of these walked across the country, sleeping in the woods, you know, doing all that natural, he said, you would be among, almost always, one of the last people picked, but you did it. The key is, folks, get your mind right. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And by golly, if I ain't going to make it, I'm going to go out kicking. I'm thanking God.
So preparation is, it helps all of that process work a little better. Because if you're prepared, you have the right equipment, you have the right mindset, you're more likely. Well, another point, I don't know if you knew this, but the Appalachian Trail is where U.S. Army Ranger School mountain phase is. So we would be out there in the dark in the day, walking around the, you know, Army Rangers that haven't slept and haven't bathed in weeks or months, and running into people going up and down the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, maybe.
That's we scared fun. A few. Yeah, we scared a few.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. So, next week I am on a work trip. I can't do anything next week, but the following week I can.
In our next installment, which I know that you will be waiting for with bated breath, we will talk about some of the ways to prepare effectively for these things, rather than running around with your hair on fire. Dr. Joe, any final comments?
Well, you know, Charlie, we need to get really practical. I think from an audience standpoint, what are things that the normal person can do? And when you're talking about CORAC, you know, a lot of our CORAC people are a little bit, shall I say, aged. And so, you know.
You're talking about me.
And me.
Can they do these things, you know? And that's the type of thing, I think, addressing those things, not only what to do or actions to take, but maybe you aren't physically capable of doing certain things. What are some options? And so I'm really looking forward to the next session.
We, when we start the next session, and I will put out there what I call the rule of threes, and it is a way of thinking of how to get prepared. It's an old Navy SEAL thing, and a lot of people don't like it because there are times when the sequence doesn't work. But the rule of threes are, you can't live 3 seconds without the will to live. Okay. And for us, that will to live comes from our faith. You can't live 3 minutes without air. Okay. You can't live 3 hours without shelter in an extreme environment. That's hot or cold. Right. And fire is shelter. You can't live 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food, 3 months without hope, and 3 years without human contact. So we'll talk about those, and that will start us on our trip of how to get ready. But again, number one is your mental state. Number two is if you have some things, and it's really not, it doesn't have to be fancy at all. So that's what we'll start with next time.
Looking forward to it. Now, at this point, why don't we close with the, I always like to close with the St. Michael prayer, because the demons are having a ball because they know their time is short and we need all the help we can get. So on that note, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in the day of battle. Be our safeguard against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. And so I will say that for me, your host Charlie, for Ed McCulloch, and for Dr. Joe Brickner, my partner, who at 75 is still playing basketball, guy, he'll be able to move around, folks. Until next time, remember, acknowledge God, take the next right step, and be a sign of hope to those around you. Till next time, all you Corac preppers.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.